Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Friday, July 22nd, 2016. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Folks, I've lied to you. It's actually Thursday, July 21st at 11:53 p.m., 2016. We have just finished our coverage of the Republican National Convention. There's a guy giving a benediction. I don't want to sound anti-religious in any way, but I don't give a shit.
New atheist.
Yeah, I'm totally, totally new atheist. I'm completely... sorry. Folks, look. Kelly is signaling me something. And Kelly, why don't you get on the... you actually want to stream this right now? Yes, sure, of course. We can clip this later. It's fine.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
All right.
You didn't hear me wrong.
No, I hear you. That's fine. Folks, let me tell you what the deal is. We've just watched the final speech of the Republican National Convention. We're going to talk to Cliff Schechter. Look, we've been doing this for four nights in a row. I've been drinking probably more than I have in years. I'm not healthy. I'm not healthy. The week prior to this, I had back problems. I had dental work where apparently the dentist hit a vein and they told me blood was going into my sinuses. And look, there was a lot of problems. So what we're doing is we're going to take a break. I'm going to call Cliff Schechter. We're going to talk about the election. Jessica is here with us. Turn up her mic briefly because we got to be careful.
Because we're mostly cutting off her mic.
Right, exactly.
But right now we're turning on her mic.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Jessica's here with us. Of course, Kelly and Matt. Michael is out. I don't know.
He's got business.
It's date night. It's Thursday night. It's late.
I'm a loyal fucking person here, so I don't know about cutting off my mic. Just
right.
Say.
There you go.
Okay.
Let's cut off the mic. Yeah. And Ray. Ray is here. All right, she's mad. She's mad. She's very mad. And she is indignant, ladies and gentlemen. All right, look, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to call Cliff Schechter. In the meantime, hold on. Listen to this. We've got Jimmy Reefercake, who has written a song about the Republican National Convention. It is called... Oh, you can't play it, can you? It is called Cleveland Steamer. Now, that's a term that is... You've got it, right?
I'm getting it so badly.
Okay. Matt's going to get this. Cleveland Steamer. It is the... Oh, all right. Jessica's now... she's upset. We're going to turn the microphone back on, but we got to get Cliff on. All right. Jessica's upset.
And you need me, because you and Cliff, not so much.
All right.
Me, you and Cliff, pretty good.
Folks, look, it's been a long week. And next week, just so you know, as Matt looks for Cleveland Steamer, Jimmy Reefercake's song, expressing this week... next week, I am going to be in Philadelphia reporting live from the Democratic National Convention. Look, we have some ideas about how we're going to do this technologically. It may be a total disaster. And it would be even more of a disaster because I got news for you. Hotels in Cleveland, expensive. And getting electricity to Radio Row, prohibitively expensive. So hopefully this will work out. But at the very least, we're going to try. I'll have reports from there. At the very least, I'll be there. And I don't frankly know how that benefits you in any way. But it might. Who knows? All right, so we're going to take a quick break. Do you have the Jimmy Reed for Cake song? Okay. All right, so we're going to play that, and I'm going to call Cliff Schechter, and we'll be... we'll be right back after these moments.
From my reefer-fueled brain up here in Maine, this one goes out to the heartland of America. Brooklyn, motherfuckers. I'm drinking booze, staying up late, listening to the Majority Report, of course. Listen to the booze, Ted Cruz, you loser, you refused to endorse. The rotavirus has them all crapping and puking in the garbage pail. But the Benghazi story keeps on rocking. They wanna put Hillary in jail. It's not enough to call Hillary a bitch. She's in league with Lucifer. Is she a witch? It's a Cleveland steamer. Oh, it's a Cleveland steamer. A platform of endless war and gay conversion is not what we need. These goddamn hypocrite sickos don't even support medical weed. It's a good old-fashioned witch hunt. I heard that Chachi guy even called her a cunt. It's a Cleveland steamer. It's a Cleveland steamer, yeah.
I'm speaking with myself, number one, because I have a very good brain.
All right, there we are. Ladies and gentlemen, that was of course, Jimmy Reefer Cake's Cleveland Steamer. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday, more or less. We're actually recording this on a Thursday. And that means that we play this song. Oh, I got it. On my...
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter. Libertas
LLC. Cliff, it is late. It's actually now, I guess it's Friday. It is really early on Friday morning. Thank you so much for being with us, Cliff.
Sure. Has the apocalypse already come? Because I heard it was coming tonight.
We're pretty close,
I'm
buddy.
I don't know about you. I'm hiding.
We're pretty close. All right. So we're at the end of the Republican National Convention. I'm still watching C-SPAN and their coverage. I am admittedly less sober than I am on most Fridays. I apologize for that up front. Give me your sense of broadly speaking, we've seen 4 days of this convention. Is this going to move the needle? Like, what are the implications of this convention? Is it just that we've been able to get drunk for 4 nights in a row and, you know...
I think that was your excuse. I mean, you know, next week you'll have the Democratic convention, and then you just need to find new excuses to get hammered every night, Sam.
I know. Is there going to be, like, a Green Party convention? Maybe I could... All right, but
yeah, you could go rock it with Jill Stein. Here's what I would like to say about tonight. Great Trump speech, America first, stop wars, defeat the corrupt elites, protect our borders, fair trade. Couldn't have said it better. Oh, I'm sorry. That's what David Duke just tweeted out about Donald Trump's speech.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. I just retweeted it, so go look go look under my timeline on Twitter. David Duke loved it. That should tell you a lot. Nicole Wallace on MSNBC or whatever said, my party died in this room tonight, as did a number of other other Republicans of sanity who were calling this thing out. Do you want to talk about the whole convention or you want to talk about the speech tonight?
Well, I mean, start with the speech tonight and then work your way back.
Because that's the biggest thing. I mean, look, we've chronicled a lot of this other nights. This entire thing was a shit show. The best speech of this entire, of the entire 4 days, I think, of any of the major people was given by Mike Pence, and it was stepped on by what Ted Cruz did. They could have gotten great headlines out of Mike Pence's speech, and again, it's not that I agree with anything he said. His delivery was really good. Tonight, with Donald Trump, both what he said, which I think is incredibly over the line even for a populace that has been sort of, you know, exposed to this kind of rhetoric increasingly from the Republican Party. I mean, it was all doom and gloom. It was terror. It was like an NRA convention, you know, where the people are knocking down your door and ready to come get you. And I don't think the types of groups they're trying to win, I don't think this wins with. I mean, even seeing some of the reactions on TV, you know, among Republicans, a classic example, I can't think of her name right now, the Latina consultant they have who worked for Jeb Bush and whatever on CNN, like she was so angry at this thing, she was actually screaming about it. Like literally, they had to almost stop her. I thought she maybe was going to go into tears about how basically that this was an attack on Hispanics, it was an attack on African Americans. You know, all he was doing was talking about how terrible they were and how they were murderers and what. I mean, I have to believe that others came to that conclusion across the country who heard this. You know, the usual sort of Jeffrey Lords, maybe the second funniest thing after David Duke, is Jeffrey Lord saying it sounded like FDR. Jeffrey Lord actually probably was alive to hear FDR, so there's that too. Its tone was right out of Escape from New York, or like one of those like late 70s New York is about right. to reach the apocalypse movies, like Death Wish or something. That was the tone of the whole thing. So that I don't think is going to play with most people. I think it's going to exacerbate the divisions already. It may excite people that are already for him and believe all this stuff in this alternative universe. I don't see, you know, can it sway a few people maybe who listened to this and got scared? Sure, in the short term. But in addition to that, his delivery was terrible. I mean, and again, I don't like Mike Pence, so I'm not saying this isn't out of my bias against Donald Trump. The thing was the longest acceptance speech. He went on an hour and 15 minutes, which was a terrible idea because Trump is at his best when he's charming, all right, is when he's, you know, and he can be funny and he's somebody you can, you know, you find yourself even liking a little bit, not most of the time, but it can happen, is when he's in a debate and he says something funny and something where he hits somebody like Ted Cruz and, you know, in sort of a creative way or an interesting way or whatever, or sort of, you know, dismisses him and sort of laughs at him. The problem is in a speech, you know, where you're speaking to become president of the United States, you're supposed to give this grandiose speech. Instead, he kept doing the gesticulations with his hands, where he keeps doing the thing where he, you know, makes the okay sign as he's talking, is incredibly distracting and incredibly non-presidential. The jutting out of the chin and sort of pacing from side to side while Medea Benjamin was protesting, and a few other times, his timing was all off. There was no rhythm. He stepped on a number of his applause lines, and, you know, a number of other people who were trying to watch this objectively as a speech were, I think, James Downey over at the Washington Post and others who were kind of talking about it. Because this just, I would say three things to that. One, this is not his natural thing. Giving a long speech where he doesn't get to kind of do his thing and go back right. and forth with people and rip into them and make jokes about them is unnatural for him. But second of all, when you see the things that Tony Schwartz, his ghostwriter, has been now saying, that he literally has the attention span of a five-year-old, which we've all suspected, but would refuse to even sit and have a two-minute conversation about the book, you could tell this is, if not, this was either the first or at best second time he had ever read this speech. Mitt Romney, you can bet you know what, that he practiced his speech 50 times before he gave it, at least. Trump didn't even seem to have familiarity with parts of his speech.
Yeah.
So the timing, the rhythm was completely screwed. He'd take these long pauses. He'd emphasize the wrong words. So the laziness factor, you know, got in there too, his lack of practice. And I think I'm getting like Rick Perry now, although it's midnight, so I have an excuse. I think I had a third point, but I don't remember what the hell it is. So,
Well, I mean, what struck me, there was a couple of things about this, is that this was one of the most narrow speeches. Like, going into this, I really thought that he was going to deliver. I can't remember when it was. Maybe it was a couple of months ago. He gave a press conference where I was like, oh, wow, this could be a problem. Like this could be a problem. And I thought he was going to give a speech like that, that was very broad. But he gave a speech. I mean, maybe he started getting to some of these broader themes later, but he gave a speech that was incredibly narrow, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff that Ivanka was saying about him, basically, from what Tony Schwarzenegger was saying, was making up about him.
Right.
But okay, what she was saying about him, if you don't know, it's made up, which a lot of people, who especially out there watching this, who don't pay close attention, will not. You know, that she humanized him, which is going to be now completely forgotten.
Totally. I mean, no.
Right.
And to a certain extent, that was
a
huge mistake. She should have been speaking
quickly, and let me
two nights ago.
He didn't have to say exactly, obviously he can't say about himself what she can, but he could have given this magnanimous, positive, you know, against grain. It would have been so surprising that he would have gotten amazing reviews, even if he had delivered it in not such a great way. And by doing this, he ruined all that.
I can't remember when it was, but it was about, in March or April, when he had won a couple of very big primaries that people didn't anticipate him winning. And he gave a speech that I thought, like in maybe Mar-a-Lago or whatever it was, a press conference, where I thought, like, oh, wow, his ability to pivot is pretty impressive. And I was a little bit concerned about it at the time. And this speech, first of all, they should have put Ivanka on a different night because she was completely overshadowed by her dad. Nobody's going to talk. You will not. I can tell you this right now. People are going to be listening to this on Friday afternoon. I can predict with a very strong sense of certainty that very little will be talked about Ivanka's speech. And the thing is that all of her issue sets much more align with Hillary Clinton, frankly. You know, like all of her talk about,
equal pay and
parental leave and all these issues, they much more align with Hillary Clinton. You will not hear these things. They will be completely overshadowed by Trump's speech himself. And frankly, like the idea that he gets up there and gives an hour and 15-minute long speech, the parts of which that could have resonated with people outside of the people in that arena came much later in the speech. I mean, look, I'm terrified at the notion that Donald Trump could be our president. And I have to say, the way that that speech was fashioned, the idea that he's sitting there yelling USA, USA. I mean, just for a moment, I want people to imagine other president that they're aware of. If you're a Ronald Reagan fan, imagine Ronald Reagan. If you're a, I don't know, George W. Bush fan, imagine George W. Bush. Barack Obama, Bill Clinton. Imagine any president that you appreciate. Imagine them during a speech joining along in a chant USA. Don't lower themselves in that fashion.
That's what I mean. There were a number of things like that that were just so non-presidential in the way he behaved up there. And again, like George W. Bush, who I loathed, which I think you'll remember as a president and would say is one of the worst presidents quite easily in the history of this country, if not the worst. In those big moments, he would drive me crazy because he would get up there and all that stupid, inappropriate crap he would do, like what he was doing at the funeral the other day, where he's kind of dancing around, clapping his hands, and Michelle Obama was looking at him like, what the hell's wrong with you? he would pull it together most of the time. The 9/11 speech, he gave a great speech. The you know, in his acceptance speeches he did, he would pull together and be mature and get that, get his sort of his non-presidential behaviors out, but while still adding a couple of lines in there that were kind of self-deprecating and humorous, you know, and that kind of stuff. None of that was in here. This was all death and gloom. It was all sort of the Trump's worst habits, his worst sort of hand motions, and you know, his the looks on his face of anger. And, I mean, just the whole thing. I mean, you know, again, like there are guys who've been doing this a lot longer than me, but I've been watching these speeches since '92. And I've never seen anything, you know, I mean, obviously from a presidential candidate. I mean, maybe Pat Buchanan in '92 gave a speech as angry as that. But I, you know, I mean, you know, Garry Kasparov sent something out, tweeted out, you know, I've heard this exact same speech for the last 15 years in Russian. It doesn't sound any different.
I mean, it was a very dark speech. It was a very dark speech. And it was interesting because Ivanka Trump's speech was very sort of uplifting. She cited issues that she saw that were problematic in America, but said, like, here's the rest. And Trump's speech was extremely dark. And frankly,
and that other guy too,
I'm surprised.
Right? I can't remember his name. The guy that went on forever and was got really boring.
Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah, Daddy Warbucks, exactly. He was saying all these nice things about Trump. To have that guy speak and then Ivanka, it's almost like the pitch was thrown over the plate, and it was there for him to hit out of the stadium, for him to get up and shock people with the kind of behavior we're used to from him, and give a magnanimous speech and congratulate some people, and you know, show that the Cruz thing isn't going to stop him, which I'm sure some of this anger is still there from that, and that stuff with Hillary, crooked Hillary, blah, 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 barely mention her, frankly, and just talk about how he's built all these great buildings and he's going to rebuild America and blah, 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 and use great, you know, some colorful metaphors. And I mean, you know, talk about his life and how important it's been, you know, with his kids and just all that stuff. It was right there for him to do. He did none of it. None of it. And so whatever those people potentially accomplished, he erased right there.
You know, I got
to
say,
I don't think he has the ability over a period of time to give a good speech because he doesn't have the patience, frankly. But at least if they kept this thing to like a half hour.
Yeah.
I mean,
the amazing thing about it is that the speech they released was much shorter. It was also, though, incredibly dark. I mean, the thing is that a Trump could have been much more vacuous. I mean, I have to say that, like, I genuinely believe that Donald Trump is running to become president. I think that, like, we've heard these stories from John Kasich that supposedly he was offered both the domestic and foreign portfolio as vice president, basically saying, like, you'll be the president. Dad being, because this is supposedly he was offered this from Donald Trump Jr.
By Don Jr.
Dad will be basically the figurehead. Even if that's the case, I mean, let's assume for a moment that's the case. And I, you know, look, that seems not inconsistent with the way that Donald Trump would function. Certainly as a businessman. The speech he gave tonight was not, I mean, it was, it the only way you can make rational sense of that speech, there's two ways. One is they have no idea what they're doing. The other one is that they know exactly what they're doing, and what they're doing is not trying to be president of the United States. That they're trying.
There's a third one.
They're trying to build an audience base that they can carry post-election that has nothing to do with electoral politics.
That's right. Well, he's talked about that, right? He's talked about having a TV station and trying to challenge Fox. And maybe they can hire Roger Iles. I hear he's available.
That's what I predicted tonight. That Roger, that he's going to, that's what I predicted tonight, that Roger Ailes has like
Trump. It, oh, I can see it.
Yeah.
I mean, Roger Ailes, you know, for anybody interested in political history, created Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's the one. I mean, he was the one who started. He gave Nixon these kinds of messages when they worked a lot better when we were a 90% white country back in 1968. And a much less college-educated country, and all the other things that go with that. But in addition to that, Roger, you know, he came up with the idea of creating a station like this back then, and based upon paranoid right-wing politics, you know, of like trying to make it the Republican Party a working man's party. I mean, he came from Warren, Ohio, which is not far from Youngstown, where everything has gone in a pretty bad direction, and he has that chip on his shoulder. And so, you know, the line that goes straight from some of the darker parts of Reagan, who still had a pretty sunny personality after, you know, well, Nixon first, and then Reagan, then Newt Gingrich, through some of George W. Bush's attacks on gay rights, to this final thing with the Tea Party and everything else they've done. You know, Fox has contributed in the way they've poisoned minds. And fed conspiracy theories a lot. So I wouldn't be shocked to see that happen at all. But to get back to what you were saying, the third option I was going to say, you know, you gave those two options. I think there's a third one, and the third one is simply that this guy doesn't listen to anybody, as we know.
Right.
That the professionals there wanted him to give a different kind of speech, and this is the guy that doesn't need data. He doesn't need anything because he knows better than all of us.
He wants to be president. He's just a moron.
This is the speech he wanted to give because he's a dark, angry guy. And if you think about how dark and angry he is, Elizabeth Warren's been teeing off on him on Twitter lately. Bernie Sanders has been rejecting his overtures. Hillary's been ripping on him. And then you have this convention where you've got a number of delegations try to take the nomination away from him, and Ted Cruz gets up and snubs him in prime time. You know, you can see this as reflecting his mood, as what Nixon often said reflected his mood.
Interesting.
And that's what if I had to tell you what I think happened, that's what I think happened. I think this is Donald Trump's speech. This is what Donald Trump wants to say. This is what he thinks appeals to people because he's that angry.
Right.
And the professionals there tried to probably dissuade him, not very much, because they know they'll get fired if they push it too much. And this is what we came out with. That would be my suspicion.
I mean, I think that could very well be the case. I mean, I think that this is, I think, you know, Trump definitely, the idea that Trump knows best is not in any way. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny because I remember, you know, I remember being at Air America and getting emails from listeners saying, like, we think you have a mole at Air America. And thinking, like, you know what, that's not an irrational thing to think based upon how badly this place is managed, but it's just like sort of like just bad managers, and they do things that are so irrational in some ways just out of their own sheer incompetence that it appears to be much more nefarious than it actually is.
Right, and I can tell you, Sam, because, again, like having done this for a living gives me an insight into this, and so I've written speeches for some statewide figures, from a few national figures, and again, you know, I've had people where that's my job, and I can say a couple times, because I've, you know, sadly had one or two occasions where I've written for a few people that I thought were pretty dark figures of the left, who were always, you know, always brooding and weren't very happy people. And I could say a number of times, you know, this is not going to sell, and this is not what you want to communicate. But if they said no to me a half dozen times, really more like two or three times, I would try to argue my case probably at least twice.
Right, and
but
then
some
you,
point,
just
you just
say,
like, this is,
okay,
this is it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that dynamic. I think I've told the story before, but I did it's completely unrelated, but I did a show for Sony TV where they were trying to where I was an executive producer and I was also the lead actor, and I was getting involved in casting, and I said, like, you know, I feel no dynamic between me and this lead actress. And they said, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because the last version of the show we did, they had intense dynamic between the two of them. In fact, they dated. And it didn't show up on camera. So maybe if you don't have intense, you don't feel like you have a dynamic, it'll be there. And I got the message, which was, we're paying you tens of thousands of dollars. Shut the fuck up. And I was like, okay. And you get that message. And that's basically what it is. All right. So
So let me read you one more thing here. I'm just saying. So this is the kind of reaction I think you could say you're getting from mainstream Republicans here. This is Ross Douthat. I'm pronouncing his name wrong. Douthat, whatever you
From the New York Times.
Yeah, from the New York Times. And again, these guys shape opinion because if conservatives like this all in unison say something is great and everybody on the left says it's terrible, well, then the media has to report he said, she said stories. Right? Some say it's bad, some say it's good. But this is the kind of thing I've read coming out of many prominent Republican figures tonight. Okay, so here's what he tweeted out. Every major figure who participated in this grotesquerie has disgraced themselves in a level unique in the history of our republic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So,
well, Ted Cruz is betting on that as well, right? I mean, that's why he did his mutiny. All right, so here's, let me ask you this. Broadly speaking, forget about the last night. Just the entire convention, does it make a difference? I mean, does, like, you know, okay, we've had a lot of fun. I've gotten far too drunk over the course of this. I've probably, like, no longer fit into the pants that I had 4 days ago just because I've all I've been doing is been drinking and eating crappy food. Yeah. But is there, from the Republican convention, is there any relevance going forward?
Is there relevance from this?
I mean, is it gonna make a difference in terms of the race?
Well, it makes a difference in that I'm guessing there will be little bounce, if any. Okay, and so it may the intensity of support from his already supporters may go up, but I'm guessing the numbers aren't going to change very much in a positive direction for him. And frankly, with everything else that went wrong during this, it could change into a negative direction. I mean, he could be one of the first people to actually lose points. I don't think that'll happen, but I don't think he's going to gain very much. And so it won't have relevance because if he could do something, put major TV ads on, he could change the conversation happening next week. But what this is a major lost opportunity, and you only have so many of them. There are very few times when you really sort of have all the attention on you and your party, and you really have the floor to yourself. And this is now, you know, the debates will still come up.
Right, but he doesn't have the ability to control the debates in the way that he had the ability to control this.
That's right.
I think you're right.
It's a huge lost opportunity.
I would add one more thing. I think that the failure to execute, like the expectations, I feel going into this, there was a sense that Donald Trump, the one thing he can do is he's a showman. And that he's going to put on an amazing show that's going to be compelling. We may find it annoying and vacuous. But I think there was a sense amongst the media that this guy is going to put on a great show. And I think coming out of this, there is a sense amongst the media that particularly, like, you know, I use the ice skating rink as an example. The ice skating rink is, like, to me, the signature of Donald Trump for people who perceive him positively. He can do anything. He can just get it done. And I think the media walks away from this based upon their own personal experience and on the way that they perceive the convention. Like, this guy's competence is not what we thought it was.
That's right.
And I think we're going to see
going for him.
Yeah, I think we're going to see going forward that they're going to revisit this narrative. And so any lack of competence that we see going forward is going to be highlighted in a way that we wouldn't have otherwise. It's a safe place for them too.
Because it's inevitable when you refuse to have a real campaign and no real vetting and no real staff. Yep. So you're right. I mean, the myths that he had succeeded in getting into everybody's minds that he infected us with over the years of him playing this role was of this titan of a businessman. Everything he touched turned to gold. Well, now everybody's learned about Trump University and Trump stakes and all this other stuff that's shown near the casinos that have failed. That's not true, and it's hard for any objective media figure to ignore that. And now this convention, him as a great businessman has become a questionable thing, and you've seen it questioned more and more. And now you add on top of that both his ability as a showman, because he gave a terrible speech and everything else there, and then his competence and judgment, I mean, not judgment in terms of policy, which everybody already knew, but judgment in terms of
execution,
negotiations. I mean, how did they let Ted Cruz get up in
prime
time to do that?
Yep.
How the hell did Medea Benjamin get in the hall tonight?
Yeah, yep. I agree with you.
They're going to keep out undocumented workers, but they can't keep her out of their hall?
Yeah. I think you're right. These competence questions are huge. All right, so lastly, Cliff. Next week, Democratic convention. I'm heading to Philly. I should just say, as a programmatic note, I have no idea if the technology that we're going to be using is going to work. I couldn't afford to get the electricity on Radio Row that I had hoped for. So we'll see in terms of our coverage. But that aside, what does Hillary Clinton have to do? Like if you were to say, like, okay, here's the paragraph or the sentence that the convention needs to convey, what would it be? Yeah. Because let me just set this up for people.
Go ahead. It
could be Hillary Clinton needs to convey her competence. It could be Hillary Clinton needs to convey that Donald Trump is that bad. It could be some combination of that. It could be ideological. It could be in terms of CV. I mean, there's a lot of questions that she's going to ask. And by her, I mean her campaign apparatus.
Yep.
What do you think it should
be? Here's what I would do. You know, if I were her, and I think if I were them, and I think they will, I would have her give a positive speech. Frankly, do for herself, because obviously she's got incredibly high negatives too, not where Trump is. But they've succeeded in sort of tarring her as somebody who's broken the law. You know, I mean, at least some objective media figures have repeated some of this stuff in a way that it shouldn't be. You know, and not repeating that, well, the FBI decided that she wasn't to be indicted. And so they've some of these, you know, themes that she's crooked, she's this, she's that, they've certainly pushed some of that. And she needs to make people forget at least some of that by doing exactly what Trump needed people to forget his negative personality with tonight. She needs to come out with a glowing, positive talk about the unifying, you know, what in her life brought her here. Mm. She basically needs to talk about herself before she was a Clinton, if you know what I mean. I don't mean married to Bill, but before she was of the Clintons when they became presidents. I shouldn't say presidents, but if she now is going to become president. And so to me, she needs to talk about what it was like growing up, frankly, as a woman and trying to strive for equality and in ways in which she had to fight to get to where, you know, come growing up in a very, you know, in a middle-class family in the suburbs and or wherever, I don't know. But, you know, point being that she has to connect her passion. She's worked on children's issues. She's worked on issues for equality. She's going to tell that story while telling the story of her childhood and her family and her love for her family, you know, and all of that, and do essentially what he didn't do. And that, you know, because she, into that narrative, can mix, well, that's why I wanted to pass health care so badly, and that's why I wanted to, because these have been the unifying things in my life. These have been the things I've cared about. And if she does that, and she smiles, and she does it, even she, you know, she's not a terrific at giving speeches either. She's not her husband or Barack Obama or a number of other people that are known for this. But if she can do it in a steady and even way, if she can smile and if she can, you know, put warmth into it, you know, and be thankful and be magnanimous, you know, and that kind of thing, I think that's what she needs from it. I mean, she's going to have a virtual murderer's row surrounding her. I mean, you're going to have Bernie Sanders, and you're going to have Elizabeth Warren, and you're going to have Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, her husband, Bill Clinton. I mean, you don't get much better than that in terms of star power.
Right. That's
and
true.
So, and a lot of them and you know, are going to be able to make the case against Donald Trump. It doesn't mean I don't think she shouldn't question Trump in that speech. I think it should be a positive speech, but she needs to contrast herself. But instead of doing it in the dour, you know, you should go to prison, you know, or that kind of a way, you do it in the way she has been doing it very effectively, I would say, where she's like, you know, it's funny, no matter how many books Donald Trump writes, they seem to always end on chapter 11, which I thought was a great line.
Right.
You mix in funny lines like that where you belittle him and you mock him a little bit, but you do it in a funny way, not in a nasty way. That's how you do it, mix in with a very positive speech, and you leave it to others to go after him in a much harsher way.
Well, Cliff, I'm going to try and give you a call during the course of the Democratic convention to see if she's been able to execute or if the convention itself has been able to execute in the way that you are talking about. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
It is late on, well, Friday morning early, and this has been exhausting. The whole thing has been exhausting for the American
public. Really, this has been, I'll say one thing about Trump beyond everything else is it seems like everything around the guy is so exhausting.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's true. Just, right? I mean, you know, this week, you know, we look at all that went wrong with this thing and the vice presidential pick back and forth and the, you know, nothing's easy. Right?
No, it's indeed. Insane. Well, I mean, and, you know, I think, well, all right, let's leave it at that.
Well, you know, even I'll say the last thing, which you could even say if it weren't for the fact that this has brought up a lot, that maybe it was just a quick oversight in the heat of the moment. But the guy didn't mention his daughter, Tiffany, when he thanked the kids.
Interesting.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that. But he also, Ray, who is in our studio audience tonight, also noticed that he didn't do any of the God Squad stuff.
Yeah, he didn't.
And you know, like to people like you and I, to people like you and I, that's not an issue. But for I think there's a lot of people out there. I mean, look. You know, I mean, we could spend a lot of time talking about this, but Ted Cruz made a bet. Ted Cruz is not an idiot. He may be a psychopath, but
yes,
he's not
stupid.
A lot
of things I could say about Ted Cruz, but he's an incredibly smart guy.
Yeah.
Incredibly
and
evil.
At the very least, he thinks there's a significant portion of people in the Republican Party who are going to appreciate the fact that he basically said F you to Donald Trump. And that, to me, is fascinating. I guess we won't know for a couple of months as to whether or not Ted Cruz was right, but that to me is very striking. But
yeah, I'll say one more. I keep thinking of things. I'm sorry. I know we got to go, but I'll say quickly. The other thing I'm really interested to see is if some of the remaining, and there aren't that many at this point, most of the people that were kind of holding out for Bernie when he endorsed Hillary went along. It seemed in more recent polls, but of some of the others that were holding out, I'm interested to see if this speech scares them.
Oh my God. I mean, honestly, with all due respect,
you know,
look, the idea that someone could watch this and say like, it's not, there's no difference. It's just absurd. I mean, honestly,
yeah.
It's just absurd. And yes, I share in the lament that, because the Republican Party is so, deranged in some ways. I mean, I'm sure there's a more eloquent way and a more elegant way of saying that, but
not when you're drunk at 1 a.m.
Right.
Don't
exactly. I'm sure there's a more, elegant way of saying that, but I'm sorry. The choice is pretty stark. And you know, we see who Donald Trump, even just by his pick of Mike Pence, who he has to capitulate to. And that's, to me, that's all it's about. It's just sheer power.
Yep.
Like, you know, who does Hillary Clinton have to capitulate to? It's more us than the people
right.
who want Mike
that's
Pence.
That's what the argument I've been making for a long time is that the gravity in the party has changed. She has to
yep.
listen to us. It just, you know, on every choice, no. But to a large degree,
yep.
yes.
Cliffy, we'll be in touch. We'll figure out how we talk next week. I appreciate
all right,
your coming on.
Sounds
it's,
awesome.
It's
thanks
late
again,
night.
Buddy.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Get
Bye-bye.
Some sleep.
I will. All right, folks. Cliff Schechter, that's our coverage of the Republican National Convention this week. If you want the entire coverage, which really... The only reason why I could think, like, the primary reason why would be to see, like, how much I swear and how inappropriate I am was it Thursday night or Wednesday night? I was really, like, I'm embarrassed. I got to say, I'm embarrassed.
I think that's the first time since I've worked here that you...
Yes, no, I like to maintain some decorum. I feel like if I'm going to do something in a public sphere, I should maintain some type of decorum. And I didn't do that on...
There's a time and a place.
There's a time and a place. And then I suppose that's it. But nevertheless, if you really feel compelled to hear that type of inappropriateness from me, go to Majority Report, join themajorityreport.com. Yeah, I'm too drunk even now to remember the URL. Jointhemajorityreport.com and become a member today. You will have access to that. And, you know, let me apologize in advance. Next week, here's how it's going to work. On Monday, I am going down to, or Sunday, I'm not sure yet which one. I have to figure out. There's so many, at one point during the week, I will talk to you about how the whole credential thing has panned out. And I've done it on the cheap. And part of that is so that I could do it. On Monday, I will call into the show for members. On Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, hopefully I'll be able to broadcast live. We have a technology we've been working on. I don't know if it's going to work. Matt seems mildly...
I'm optimistic.
Mildly optimistic, but let's face it. I mean, Matt is just like, that's the way he is.
Yeah, that's my base state.
And that's he doesn't really deviate from that. And even if things turn to just complete shit, he's just sort of like mildly optimistic of stuff. So you really can't, that's not a barometer in any way whatsoever. So if you have confidence that it's going to work because Matt feels confident about it, you're making a mistake. Nevertheless, that's the plan. We'll see. I don't know. I've got like 12 different people sending me emails about booking people that I have a mild interest in. And hopefully I'll be able to run into people. Who knows? Was this a pitch to join, to become a member, to support the program? That's a bad pitch. Particularly like when my landlord is here, when he's thinking like, is this guy going to be able to make rent next month? He's got to be concerned about this. Now I feel like he's going to go home and he's going to walk into his house and just be like, I'm not sure that this is a good idea. Nevertheless, become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com.
It's that post-convention guilt.
Exactly. I just feel so bad for the country right now. I can't even tell you. Like, I just feel like we should just roll all this shit up and just... Let's just report on how warm everything's becoming. And the past 14 months, apparently, broken records. We're all fucked. Let's face it. So, okay. So that's how next week's going to go. Hopefully it'll all work out. Jointhemajorityreport.com is how you become a member. And, of course, if you don't want to join the Majority Report, but you drink coffee and you buy, like, some fancy schmancy coffee, look, go to justcoffee.coop. It's a fair trade coffee company. They are a great company. They're co-op. That's why it's dot co-op. Buy your coffee from them. Buy the Majority Report blend. It's a great coffee. And, you know, this is that way you don't like feel like you don't have to do anything. And if you buy crap from Amazon, of course, buy it from our majorityreportkickback.com. You can click on the link, buy all your Amazon stuff there and your jet.com stuff from there. And we get a kickback. It's not huge, but look, every little tiny bit helps. Somebody had to pay for this beer tonight and this Jeb Cup 2016, which actually I feel like we could sell and probably finance the show for like a year. At this point, it's a pretty big collector's item. All right, thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you next week.
You want to hit on it?
Oh, yeah. And... as a function of the fact that we probably need like what do we have now? Like a 12 channel mixer? We probably need like an 18 channel mixer. But until we get one, folks, this is this.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my power. don't get paid for the rope that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. And I shifted it into you while I shifted in and out of you, for my moment to happen. I don't know how much more.